Welcome to the good, the bad, and the sequel with your hosts, Doug and Jamie.
We are back, and this is the movie podcast where we're talking sequels and we do it in two parts. The first, an interview with an actor, someone involved that made the film worth watching. And the second, a discussion of the sequel, what they got right, what they got wrong, and how it could have been better. Really hope you enjoyed last week's interview with, I forgot his name.
Kirk Taylor.
Thank you, Jamie, for the
save. Giggler.
The Giggler, yes. So it was so cool, like, to be able to do this movie and to interview somebody. Obviously, we couldn't interview Charles Bronson, but a guy that was such a big part of the movie, it was a turning point. And, dude, I cannot wait to talk about Death Wish 3. This movie is really big because I watched this movie with my dad. I watched the first two of my dad, but this movie was just so over the top. It almost was, like, not believable, but it could happen. But before we dive into Death Wish 3 and talk about Charles Bronson and his epic line delivery, I have to introduce you to my partner in this sequel-watching journey, Jamie Riccardi. Jamie, how you doing, man?
I'm doing good, Doug. How are you doing?
Oh, dude, I'm doing so much better because I watched this movie like a few months ago when I was like, dude, we have to do this. And then the next day you're like, boom, Kirk Taylor's email. And that was awesome.
Yeah, you know, this is the first time I've seen any Death Wish. I mean, I knew all about them. I wish I saw these earlier.
Oh,
you
know? Yeah.
I can't wait to dive into this.
Oh, dude, this is going to be great. And we have help because you have to have help when the body count is this high. You need help. And we brought in Andrew. He's got the powers. Andrew, how you doing, man?
Doing great, Doug. And Jamie, I'm so happy to be here. I'm stoked for this movie. It was absolutely amazing. It was a great ride, and I'd love to talk about it.
Yeah, man. And this is cool. This is the first time we're putting the video on YouTube, and it's perfect. So, Andrew, describe your getup.
So, I've never done a podcast before. I don't know if there's a dress code. So, I wore my Charles Bronson Death Wish 1 abs, my Death Wish 2 beanie, and I didn't know how formal we were going, so I got a tie.
It looks like the tie he wore when he went over for his date.
In this movie?
In this movie, yeah, when he went over to Kristen's house to date a girl. Yeah, a girl that is arguably 30 years younger than him.
Yeah, I had questions about that too.
Oh, yeah, we're going to get into that.
Yeah, so we have to talk about that. So, yeah, so this is Death Wish. Dude, the coolest thing about this movie is it starts off, and I don't know if you guys knew who did the soundtrack, but Jimmy Page.
Yes.
The soundtrack of this movie.
That was nuts. I saw that in the credits. I'm like, wait, is this the same guy, or is this, like, someone completely different? And I looked it up. I'm like, holy shit, that's amazing.
Well, I mean, the music throughout, even just like a little like synthesizer, or like when he's just by himself, this like music that is just epic every time he's around. Even when he's just going on a date, it's like love music. It's like it fit everything perfectly.
And even when he was just riding on a bus in the beginning of the movie, and you saw the old New York skyline, you see the Twin Towers, and you see Paul Kersey just riding a bus.
So, before we get into this movie, I just have to, because I've never seen the other two, but I know, so in the first movie, his wife and daughter die, or?
No, just the wife. The daughter is, like, mentally scarred.
Okay, and she's in the second one, and then she dies in the second one?
Yeah, she jumps to her death.
Okay, now, and he's an architect, right?
He's just an architect.
Okay. So he has no training or skill whatsoever with guns, fighting, or nothing?
None at all.
That's the weird thing, because he seems to be hiding. Like, he's always like, I'm a conscientious objector. But you really seem to be pretty damn skilled with all those guns and then hand-to-hand combat. That one threw me.
See, I was thinking, like, in a past life, he was like, Liam Neeson. Like, you know, or maybe Steven Seagal in Under Siege. Like, he's not just a cook. But he was a war veteran. Here it's like, you know, he's not just an architect, but he does have a background, but he has no background.
No, he was in the war.
Okay.
But he didn't do it. And you see the first one. So in the first one, he has like this scene. He goes out the first time he gets a gun. It's a gift from a developer in like Arizona.
Yeah.
And the guy even calls him then It was either him or somebody in the office calls him a bleeding heart liberal. And that's even the movie. When you look at the tagline in the movie, it says Paul Kersey, bleeding heart liberal. And it's like, not anymore, bro. Not at all.
Now, did this movie come around at the same time as Dirty Harry?
Oh.
Oh, Dirty Harry was first. That was 71. The first one of this, I believe, was 74.
Yeah, because I think his gun topped Dirty Harry's gun.
Like, oh, it looked, hell yeah.
Oh, it looked like double the size.
Wildy, right? Wildy or Wildy? I can't remember.
Wildy.
Wildy.
Yeah. It sounds way too much like Django Unchained. Hildy, she's a hot box. I was like, oh, wait, hold on.
It's so funny. The Warriors came out, what, 1980?
I thought it was the 70s. Was it 80?
Oh, was it? It was right around then, 79,
yeah,
80.
Yeah, yeah.
So the gang in this movie, not the Warriors. And, dude, how awesome is it? We see Kirk Taylor right away. And also Alex Winter.
Alex Winter right away.
Oh, my God. Evil Bill Preston. That blew my mind. That blew my mind. I'm going to say more than the Jeff Goldblum in Death Wish 1.
Oh.
So this is how I watched him. I've never seen any Charles Bronson movies ever. I know I've seen bits and pieces, but never one all the way through. So I watched Death Wish 3, and when we got to Evil Bill, I lost my shit. I could not believe it. And what a potty mouth. Oh, my goodness. And then, you know, thank God he found Keanu Reeves several years later to, you know, to revamp him. But, oh, I couldn't believe that.
Well, you know, I wasn't too sure because, you know, he didn't look, I mean, he looked young, but I'm like, all right, when did Bill and Ted's come out? Like, I was surprised, like, you know, like, I figured, like, this movie came out way before Bill and Ted's.
That's what I was thinking, too, yeah.
Yeah, so I was surprised that, I wasn't sure in the beginning, it looked like him, I'm like, all right, maybe it's not him, but then you realize, yeah, it's totally him.
Yeah, he was this, and then a blood-sucking vampire in Lost Boys, and then a few years later, he meets, you know, he goes back in time. He meets Napoleon.
Interesting.
But no, so the, like, it's so great that Andrew watched, you watched the third one first, right?
I watched the third one. So
isn't that amazing?
I came in blank because I was like, I don't want to be biased by the other two. Yeah. I want to watch this one. No prior understanding of who this angry grandpa is. I just want to watch it for the movie itself. And it doesn't disappoint. It does.
Totally. So we open up and we see this old guy getting his ass beat. And it just seems like, and it's a line that's later in the movie, but I'm just like, a lot of times through the whole movie, I'm like, I understand people, you know, it's hard to move. It's hard to have the money, but dude, live anywhere, but in that little block radius. It seems like it's only like 4 or 5 blocks and it's just a war zone.
And you know, I said the same thing. I'm like, you know, you have these like young couples and you have these old people and they're all just hanging out in this, like you said, this war zone.
Yeah.
You know, it's funny you said the Warriors because I was thinking the same thing. I'm thinking like, first of all, I'm watching this movie. Is this a comedy? Like, is this movie supposed to be a comedy? Because I think I laughed more than any, like in a while, like in a movie. Because it was just like, the gangs were just so like silly.
Oh my God.
Like, and every time they died or fell out of a building,
oh, yes.
each one had a different pose and like, it was just ridiculous.
Or sound effect. I would love a super cut of all their screams. They're all just like so they didn't fit the way they were falling or the way or the person. Oh my gosh,
dude. Yeah, so
poor Charlie though. Poor Charlie.
So is this the trend in all the movies that pretty much anyone he's friends with dies?
Anyone he's in love with, female wise, yeah.
Well, I mean, Charlie died. Was he in love with Charlie?
He could have been. Maybe okay. That's why he was going to see him. Charlie, I finally understood those love letters. You love me.
That was such a coincidence, though. You know, Charles Bronson, or I'll call him Paul. Paul's coming into the building, like, just as Charlie, the guy who's he's traveled probably across the country, because he's coming from L.A.
Yeah.
He's coming to New York. He arrives just as Charlie's getting the shit kicked out of him, or right afterwards. He's like, man, like, 5 minutes earlier. Charlie would have been cool. Like, this movie would have been done.
Yes.
And how common is the name Charles? I mean, his friend, his name is Charlie's. Do you think he had any input? Like, listen, my name is Charles Bronson. I want Charlie in there. I mean, they couldn't think of any other name.
Maybe some lazy writer. He's like, just put something in there. He's like, Charlie.
And then he goes, all right, we need and a giggler.
No, you know what was really funny? So before that, because I sometimes at night I watch the movie and I wear these headphones and I pick up these random things. Dude, how about when he's taking the cab from the bus station to go see Charlie and you hear over here the people arguing when there's a car accident?
Yeah.
You heard that? It was like, I pulled out and you hit my car. And then he goes to the cabbie, $20 if you can get us out of here. And the cabbie goes, thanks, man. No emotion. It was like they were like, hey, just like read through the line. He's like, thanks, man. They're like, all right, cut, we're done.
And that was the weirdest thing too, because he paid them $20 basically to drive straight. I mean, he went over the curb a little bit, but I mean, this is New York. They're doing that all the time in the 1980s.
Yeah, they're hitting people.
Like you could have saved $20 and said, hey, can you just drive normal? I don't know. That blew my mind.
And the fact that you said the timing of it, he gets there right when Charlie. Which we didn't know he was dead on the spot yet. We find out later in the hospital, but he's there, and then the cops bust in and they throw him across and they're like, all right, get out of here.
Within seconds.
No detective work. I get it. You show up, a guy is near a dead body. You could put two and two together and most likely get four. But what about hey, do you know this guy? Like, what's the whole situation?
No questions whatsoever. They just threw him against the wall. Like, oh, he's a killer. He must have done it.
This is something that Paul learns later in the movie, is that the cops only investigate crimes in the daytime. So if he kills somebody during the night, they don't come upon the body until the morning.
Which is wild.
So he does learn.
Well, I think the cops in this movie only kill about three people.
Oh, the cops are the worst in this movie.
100%.
Even when they're beating him up. How about when they're asking him questions and they keep, like, punching him, I guess, like, there's only going to be bruises, obviously, in what you're showing. Pretty much he was wearing, like, a freaking jacket and jeans and pants. But he goes, no bruises, see? And he's punching him in the gut. I'm like, what the hell, dude? And Ed Lauder's in this movie. And his opening line is amazing. Like, when he's reading the script to do this, the first line is, who's this dude?
Well, he says dude throughout the whole movie.
Yeah.
It reminded me of, it was a Bill or Ted's father.
Oh, now that
he
kind of
looked like him. Yeah, but it's not him.
No, I know it's not, but he looked like a lot like him.
Oh, yeah. Holy smoke.
But yeah, he starts punching him too. It's like at first they didn't know who he was, and they just like, there's no questions. They just started torturing him, like just beating him up.
And they had a good battle too. They went back and forth punching each other. Paul kicked him. He went to a desk, and then he freaking flew over like air punch. Knocked him on the ground. And he said, maybe I should have you killed. I'm like, what the fuck is happening right now? It's a cop. Well,
they're totally setting it up as if like the cops or the bad guys are working with the gang members. Cause like, I'm thinking like, all right, that guy's gotta be some kind, you know, cause it just seems to be too off the wall.
No, definitely. So Andrew, you've seen Rambo, right?
Oh yes. Yeah.
Who would you say is the worst police force? These guys or the cops in Rambo?
It's definitely these guys. I mean, later on in the movie when it starts to really get hairy, I mean, just the gun battles, they shoot like stormtroopers. They can't hit shit. They can't, like, they're shooting like hundreds of bullets. They're not hitting anybody. And they're getting shot. Oh, I couldn't believe
it. Well, in their defense, though, it looks like Charles Bronson learned from Dirty Harry's one-shot kills. Because every shot he does, the guy dies right away. It's one kill. There is no one like getting shot in the leg. It's one shot kills throughout the whole movie.
He does have one shot kills, but there is one point in the movie I was almost like, okay, dude, just hit him already. He missed. He was firing so many misses, and I'm like, what, are these like bad takes? Like, why would they have left it in there? He's just pointing, and he's like, and he misses, and I'm like, all right, next one he misses, I'm like, what the hell's going on? It's not like it was like the main boss. It was some random henchman. And now, Dude, the holding cell.
Oh.
Oh my God. So, the characters in there.
Well, the first guy the black guy that just out of the blue punches that huge guy next to him.
Yes.
What was that? Like there's no sense for that. Like he started going nuts once he got in there.
I've been in one holding cell ever in my life, and it was nothing like that. That was like a battle royale.
Do you think he would have survived if he were one of those?
No, I wouldn't at all. And the one guy, how about the one guy that looked like one man gang?
Yeah. When
Paul was, I don't know why Paul was thinking about pissing in that nasty toilet, but he just stares at him and he goes, I tore the toilet out. And then Kersey friggin' puts his head through the bars.
Is that possible?
Maybe. His ears were bleeding. It was like his ears got ripped off.
Yeah, that was.
So you're saying the only reason why his head was able to go through is because you have ears. So if you don't have ears, he slid his head right back.
Exactly.
Those bars are pretty thin. I don't think a head's going through. especially a head that size.
That was pretty big.
That was like a King Kong Bundy head. That was not going through.
And that's where he meets Buffalo Bill in that jail cell. I don't understand what Buffalo Bill's problem. Like, you see him peering across the cell, and you're like, what the fuck did he do to him? Like, there had to be like I'm seeing this for the first time. I'm like, there has to be a history. Like, this almost has to be like Die Hard 3, where you kill my brother. So that's what I'm waiting for. Like, when I rewatch the number one and two, but I'm like, no, there's no connection. This douche just really hates him.
Well, I got a question about him. So first of all, was that supposed to be like a tough guy haircut? Like, what was that? That haircut he had.
You're talking about not Kiefer Sutherland, that guy?
Reverse haircut, the reverse mohawk guy?
Yeah, Franken?
Franken?
Yeah.
Franken. Okay, so they're filming this movie. That poor guy has to walk around until the movie's over with that haircut, like in real life? Because what was the point of that? That was the dumbest haircut I think I've ever, I think I'd rather see a mullet.
And how about, again, he's 64 years old when they're doing this movie. Why is everybody trying to kick his ass? I don't get it. The one guy walks up. It's like the next day. Again, he's in this holding cell for way too long, but he's sitting there, and some guy walks up to not Kiefer, and he goes, hey, I'm thinking about moving on the old guy over there. What did he do?
Well, he did slam a big bowling ball head into the door.
Wouldn't they be scared of that he took this guy's head, bulbous head, and put it in between these bars?
Yeah, I guess.
Unless I didn't see his head. I don't know if he had that weird ass gang symbol on his head. I don't know. Maybe he was part of the clan.
I didn't see it. Maybe it was like
no. I don't think he did.
Yeah.
I didn't see the two lines going down and then the one going across. Who the hell thought of that? Another, it was probably a placeholder for something cooler, and they're like, "Just leave it. We just got to do it."
Oh no, they ran out of makeup, and they're like, "Ah, this makes it easy."
And then so Stryker, Ed Lauder, he says, "Hey, Paul, I'm gonna let you out because I've been following you." And then they have to do that. They were like, he said, "I was a deputy, back." When you were doing the killings 10 years ago and blah, 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 blah. But then he goes, I'll let you out, but you know what? You're going to start killing people for me. I'm like, what the this is so crooked. First, he's kicking his ass like 2 days before. He was in there for 2 days. Because you know how you know? Because Charlie died. He had his funeral. Funerals don't happen that quick. Because when he gets back to the apartment, Bennett says, hey, you missed it. It was a really lovely funeral. It's like, wait, how long was Paul in prison?
I thought it was like overnight. Like, I didn't think I wasn't putting two and two together. I thought it was overnight.
If they had that plan, if they already had the casket already bought, it means the gang paid for it. And they like just dropped them right in or something.
Well, maybe they do that after they kill the people. They like, you know what? They feel bad. You know, we'll take care of the arrangements.
What a nice gang.
You know what's the weirdest line from Detective Douche, though? He goes, when he was talking, this is after he beats the shit out of him, and now he's trying to recruit him. He goes, truth is, I hate cops too. I hate creeps too, but I can't do much about it. I'm a cop. And I just went, I don't think he understands his job. Like, this dude is clearly in the wrong profession. Like, that is what you're supposed to do as a cop, is deal with the creeps. I that blew my mind. I couldn't.
He seems to have more anger with cockroaches than he does with a gang member. God. So,
and that gets brought back later in the movie.
Yep.
Because Paul says that line back to him. And now that you just said that, now that's funny that they had both of those together. But yeah, dude, that's exactly what your job description is, to take these creeps off. It's not like a doctor's like, you know what? I'd really love to cure cancer. It's like, you can do that. That's your job. Just do
it. Considering they had the head gang member in jail and they let him go.
And he said, you have a cleaner, he has a cleaner record than you do. I'm like, how?
He's just in jail. And then as he was leaving, he was like, I'm going to kill an old lady.
Wait, he says that at the station in front of cops that he's going to kill someone. What? They don't do anything about that?
This movie was awesome.
I know, right? It would have been great if that guy was like really comical and he was like kind of like crazy. He is obviously crazy, the henchman, freaking or fracking. And he goes and he says that same line, and then the cops look at him. They're like, and he's like, kidding. Or Borat. He's like, not. Oh my gosh.
Okay. So they hire him to kill the gang.
Yeah.
So until he came in the picture, the cops have never really done anything about these guys?
They said they were scared. Remember, the one cops were like, oh, I don't like that. I don't like going over there.
But they were in jail, though. Like at least, I mean, Buffalo Bill was in jail. He had to do something.
Yeah, so they can't be that scared if they're gonna arrest the gang leader. Like, you know?
No, that makes a lot of sense. And you know what's funny? So obviously at the end of the movie, we're not going to talk about exactly what happens, but... So when the gang leader, yeah, that was awesome. But when that happens, all the people in the gang go, okay, I guess we're done ganging. How about in this part? He's in prison. He's not around. No, you know what happens? One of his other guys is trying to take over. Dude, that was crazy. I don't know what that guy was doing. That was so wrong. There was no backstory to that guy maybe trying to take over the throne. But when he walks up and everybody's like, ooh, he's back. And then he stabs the guy in the throat.
Yeah. Oh.
What?
Hey, you would think, you know, that's like the second in charge. You know, you're thinking this guy's second in charge because no one else, you know, they allowed him to be in charge. Yeah. So he just basically killed the second in charge within seconds.
I know.
With that gang, I don't think there's a rhyme or reason. I just think they just do whatever they want. He just sends them all out and just, you know, because they're wasting their time robbing old ladies all the time. Like, the number one victim is an old lady.
Yeah. That's the easiest for them. If they're robbing these people that already live in these slums, how much money do they have to rob? What are they stealing? What's left?
You know what? I'll actually say that these apartments and these projects are actually beautiful.
They are.
I mean, you have all these old people with very, very nice stuff in it. And I mean, you got Charlie with a machine gun in his closet. Yes. These are for some pretty nice apartments to be in a project.
Well, I think they all have guns. I mean, somehow at the end of the movie, they all pull out all these different weapons.
Well, no, the old Jewish family, remember, they had their guns confiscated because it's illegal to...
No, that is true, because he had a great hiding spot right in front of the front door in the top drawer. That was good.
They didn't talk about that more at the end of the, like, throughout, after that happened, they didn't mention that again, that the cops were crooked. Because that was the cops. It wasn't even, it would have been better if they, or maybe they took a scene out, if that was the gang members in, like, uniform, like, trying
to. That's what I thought.
That's what I was thinking, too. And then everyone back to that.
I think they forgot. I never thought this movie, all movies could have a plot hole, but. There's one. There is one. We found it, and I'm sorry. So Alex Winter, you talked about his potty mouth. How about he looks at Rodrigo's wife? I think her name's Maria.
Okay, so before we even get to what happens, now they're living in this projects. She's going to drive around. First of all, she's always by herself.
Like, I know. Terrible.
You know what? Like, shame on the husband that he never goes out. It seems like he always has the wife out to do all the dirty stuff, like go shopping, because he never leaves the house. But she's driving around the projects where the windows roll down, these gang members all the time. Like, wouldn't she be a little bit more, you know, like a little bit more like worried about what's going on?
Yeah, he should be. But what if somebody was like, hey, man, why don't you do the food shopping? He's like, I don't clip coupons.
Wait, was that the Jewish guy?
I don't know what that was.
You sounded like a little Jewish.
Note to self, now I have a Jewish accent. But no, when Alex Winter sees her and says, I want you, bitch. I want to eat you all over.
Oh, yeah. He's like, what are you? Come on, Bill.
And Paul saved the day. That was just before he gets introduced to the giggler. Paul couldn't catch him, but then he was able to save Maria in the parking garage. And then everybody loved Paul from that. And then he was like a local celebrity within minutes. Everybody wanted to meet him.
That's right.
And he got dinner. The Jewish family made him dinner just mm-hmm. because of that. So this guy's
Bennett brought him. Bennett brought him down, up and down the building. he stayed in Charlie's place because it was rent was paid to the end of the month. Yes. Like that makes any difference? Like they were gonna rent out Charlie's place right after if he missed the rent.
And his friend, he's known him for 40 years from the war. They both lived on the projects together.
Yeah.
But so they lived in the projects like all that time.
It seems that way. Is I don't think how many times would they be able to move and move machine guns?
Okay. Oh, well, I mean, how much stuff is moved through the postal service? How much stuff does Paul pick up from his little box right down the street that's shipped through the mail? That's another thing.
And who's his connection? Like, he's an architect, right? So who's sending him bazookas and missiles and, you know, all that stuff?
I don't know, but it is so funny that he just gets it. He picks it up on the corner of like he hits a little like mail thing and then bazooka
anti-tank gun.
Yeah.
Wildy comes through the mail. The only thing I would guess is it might be the guy from Arizona in the first one. That would be.
That'd be good.
I can guess. But when he sends Wildy over, I don't know why he gives him two bullets. That's really weird. And then he has to cook the rest of the bullets.
Oh, I know.
Like you could have given more bullets, or isn't there like stores that you can go to buy bullets instead of?
Well, how about the fact that where did he get the stuff to make the bullets? he didn't ship that over. We only saw the gun. So like, where did he get that? All of a sudden, he's making bullets. He's got everything that he needs.
And he says only the best for these guys. And I'm like, I was thinking, what was he putting in there that was different? Like cyanide?
Yeah.
Maybe that's why they all like screamed. I don't know.
Maybe that's why they all died in one shot.
Yeah.
So one thing that was cool was Charlie's friend Bennett. Him and Charles Bronson, like he's a big time actor. His name is Martin Balsam. They were in a movie called The Stone Killer, like back in the 70s. And man, that guy aged pretty quick because that movie was, I think, from 75. He looks totally different. I remember seeing that movie. But man, Bennett was so cool in this movie. He was so crotchety, but he didn't want to do. He like wanted to do something. He was like that guy that said, "Oh, I'll fight him." And it's like, "Hey, dude, don't fight him." He's like, "All right, I won't fight him." Because that one time when Paul just says, "Yeah, I don't think you should be doing that," he's like, "Okay, I won't be doing that."
Well, he's also tough as hell because I mean, considering he fell off of a fire escape and he survived. I mean, he's a pretty tough old man.
He's pretty.
But he doesn't know how to use guns, though.
Well, yeah, machine gun. Charlie never showed him how to use his machine gun, which is like, I'm just going to pull it out and pretend I know what I'm doing. But I don't really know how to.
Well, it worked at first because they all ran away, and then they realized the gun wasn't working, and they ran back.
That was great. They're like, yeah, get him!
But yet, somehow, Paul knows how to shoot it, never having any kind of training. Like,
manuals. Maybe he just reads all the that long bus ride that he took all the way from LA, dude. He read everything on every gun.
He also, I mean, his aim is ridiculous. You know, he's unbelievable. I can't believe without any training, he's just a natural, you know, natural beast.
He's had two movies to practice. I mean, he should be good right now.
That is true. And he's never been arrested before in any other movies?
Wait.
No, I think he was just they suspected him in the first one, but they let him go.
They released him second one, kind of a little bit of the same thing. There's some craziness, but he's never been in jail. He's never been like physically arrested and charged and anything like that.
Gotcha. Okay.
So how about when Bennett, when he's telling the whole, because I guess obviously they have to like tell you why the guy's name is the Giggler. He goes, yeah, his name's the Giggler. He laughs when he runs. He put a knife in a girl's skull once. I'm like, ugh.
They also said something about he's very fast. Like is this like around the same time that this movie sort of turns into Home Alone?
Oh, yes. With the nails on the board and everything. Oh, and that was fantastic.
And he does it a few times.
He does it.
Yeah, some are not as bad. Like, he did the nails on the ground in his, in Charlie's apartment. He did the one for the Jewish family. And then at the end, the one was like a knife.
Yeah.
And it like freaking spiked the guy's brain.
Well, he does it the first one because he sees perfect. Was it the one that he sees perfect footprints walking into? Yeah. I mean, like, there was perfect, like, five. It's like if you're making like a fake footprints and you're putting it down like out of like paper mache, that's what it looked like. It was perfect footprint. Ridiculous.
And then he meets Rodriguez, and Rodriguez thanks him, you know, for helping out Maria. And then this one, he starts just saying, Wildy is coming. He's going to help out. So then Paul buys a car. And so, Andrew, you watched the other two. Do you think he's still working as an architect right now? Because he had a lot of cash. Because he
has tons of cash. And yeah, he pays everything cash, no car. You're like, what the heck? Where the hell is he getting all this cash for everything? Everything. Buying a car with cash, buying the PO box with cash. Yeah, there's something up. I think he's doing something on the side. There's definitely something.
Well, Andrew, let me ask you this. When he said Wildy's coming, what did you think Wildy was?
Oh, I thought it was a hot chick. I really thought it was. I was waiting. I was like, all right, here's the love interest. She's coming, and she's going to be kicking ass alongside with him. And then, yeah, it didn't turn out that way.
See, I thought it was like, if he had like a 19-year-old girlfriend.
Well, no, basically, he was with a girl 30 years younger than him, so I'm not surprised.
Okay, so Miss Davis, when she first appeared in the jail, I could have sworn she was like 75, but like a hot 75.
Wait, I was you like, thought she was 75?
Yeah, I mean, I had a few. So, but she looked about 75 to me. But and she had like the gray, almost gray hair, and I was like, man, but she looks hot. And I'm like, I bet he's gonna bang her later on. I can almost guarantee it. Never seeing any other of these movies. And sure enough, I was right.
Well, considering that she only knew him for 5 minutes, and then she followed him to his house.
Yeah, she was in love with him.
Within five. Well, it is Charles Bronson.
Yeah, well, no, I know.
That's her. Yeah.
No, I mean, the thing that was crazy was she was like, "Don't you want to talk? They held you in jail without the probable cause." Blah blah blah. He's like, "It's okay." wouldn't they tell him to like play along, sort of, so it seems real that we're not letting you out to murder? He was like, all right, I see ya.
Well, she seems kind of clueless with her job because she also went to the douche captain and said, yeah, does he have anything against him? Nope. We're keeping him. She goes, did he do anything wrong? Nope. And she goes, well, how can you keep him here? And he was like, it was just telling her to mind her own business.
Yeah, I know.
So she was, and she, what'd she work for? She worked for the DA or?
She was a public defender.
Defender, right? Yeah.
Okay. All right. So, I mean, how ridiculous is that? Like, she's just like, okay, fine.
So Paul is going down, him and Ben are eating dinner with the Kaprovs. And when they're sitting, there and you hear like somebody like working on a car, right? Or do you hear an alarm go off? I don't think they had alarms back then, did they?
No.
No.
Car alarms, no. So that he hears like somebody like window smashing. So he goes outside and he sees the two guys. He shoots both of them. And the best part was he casually excuses himself from dinner, kills the two guys, and then comes back in.
Like nothing happened.
Nothing happened at all.
He's very calm in this movie. Very calm. I mean, that's ridiculous.
Some of his line deliveries, too. The one thing I wish, compared to like Dirty Harry that we just covered, would be better one-liners. I wish he said something before he killed it. He did that a couple times in the second movie. Right, Andrew? Because
yeah,
I remember...
Yeah.
In the second one, I think, is when he electric shocks that guy.
Yeah, at the end. Yeah.
I forgot, but he says like a corny line like before him.
Yeah, there was one other guy who was like, goodbye, and then he just shot him. there's a few other good ones where he learned to deliver you know, a performance before the actual kill, and it made the movie so much better.
Well, he showed more emotion than Dirty Harry. I mean, Dirty Harry doesn't show any emotion at all. Like, he does smile in this one a little bit, you know. He doesn't seem as angry as Dirty Harry, but he still seems grumpy. You know, but very calm. Very calm demeanor.
A calm grump.
Calm grump.
Yeah, he's never angry if you think about it. Like, there's never anger. There's never, I mean, there's a little bit of happiness. I mean, maybe after Miss Davis, he, you know, maybe it was a little happiness after that. But there's really very few flashes of emotion from him if you think about it.
Well, you would think that, I mean, someone he loved in the first one died. Someone he loved in the second one died, right?
Yeah.
So, like, you would think at a certain point, he's like, all right, I'm obviously bad luck. I got to stay away from women. I mean, because they keep dying.
Yeah, he doesn't learn his lesson. The fourth one, in the fourth movie, I knew that because I've seen all of them. And I watched the fourth one for the first time in a while. And it gets to the very end. She's not really in it, like his girlfriend. In the second one, it like goes forward. I mean, the fourth one, it goes forward a few years. So she's kind of out of the movie. And then she comes in. I don't even know how she gets into that last scene, but she ends up showing up there. She gets shot in the back. Like 2 minutes left in the movie. She was so close to surviving.
All right, I gotta cue that one up next. That's on my to watch last.
Now, is this the same director in all three movies?
Michael Winner.
Yeah, Michael Winner did all three. Yeah.
One, two, three, he did, which is really weird, too.
And there's rape in all three movies, right?
Oh.
So he's got a thing for rape?
Oh.
Because I read the first one.
Yeah. Oh.
Yeah, there's rape in all three movies.
Yeah.
All three, yeah.
I thought it was just a weird thing. Cause, I mean, in this one especially, when Tonto's wife gets abducted, and then they, you know, they throw her on the mattress. That really disturbed me. And then
I hated it.
Then the doctor's like, "Nah, she just has a broken arm." And then she.
I got a question about that. So the Spanish guy once again sends his wife out alone. Like, I don't think he leaves the apartment. That guy does not leave the apartment. He sends his wife out all the time. She gets raped and beat up. I mean, like, and they show in this movie a lot of punching of women. Like, the women get punched throughout the whole movie.
Oh, yeah.
You know? And then he calls the doctor and he goes, "Oh, yeah, it's just a broken arm." How does she go from a broken arm to, like, and then what did the doctor say when they got there? He didn't say she died. They said,
Expired.
Yeah, she expired. Who says that?
And then Paul's line delivery is so calm. He's like, "What do you mean? We just talked on the phone and you said it was just a broken arm." And the doctor's like, "Yeah, she had a blood clot from the broken arm. It got into her heart." I'm like, what the fuck?
And that was pretty quick. I mean, so from the phone call to the drive over there, the blood clot went from her arm to her heart.
That is true. That was like probably 5 minutes. Because, you know, it's funny. You're right. Because the hospital is right there because Bennett's watching everything. I didn't think the hospital was that far away. But Bennett is watching out of the window celebrating at the end. God.
Yeah. I will say that Michael Winner has learned from the previous movies about the rape scenes. Because the first one with Jeff Goldblum, that's a brutal rape scene. Oh, and then it's escalated in two. So now it's like, you don't want to minimize it. But number three, it's not part of the plot. It's not part of anything. It's kind of like just thrown in there. But he did definitely tone it down from the first two.
Which was good. Because
it really wasn't necessary in this movie. Like, I mean, based on what I read about the first one, it was kind of necessary. It just made, you know, Bronson who he was and why he flipped out. But this one, like, I, you know, just, it was just, it was almost like an excuse to see boobs.
Yeah.
You know, like, it was like, you know, 80s boobs. So like, all right, let's, you know, throw some nudity in there. Because otherwise.
Which happens at the end.
It does. It does.
Yes. No, you know what's funny? So like Kirk, when I was talking to him, that's one thing he mentioned when he saw the movie in the movie theater. He said people were cheering when he died, like other people died. Because I guess that gives you that more anger when you see somebody do something so heinous. It's like, dude, they're going to kill that guy. Kind of like in the Taken movies.
Yep.
You see how rough those guys are. And then you're like, when you see him die, you're like cheering. And it's, I don't know. It just gives you like a little bit more hate towards them. Obviously you hate them already because they're, you know, throwing Molotov cocktails into old women's houses and punching them.
But that's the thing. Like, they're picking on a neighborhood that has a lot of old people. How tough is this gang really? I mean, they're going after like a nursing home. Like, how tough are you? How tough are you really?
Not tough at all. So here's the next part is the only time Paul shows emotion, even after he has sex, no emotion. So the Not Warriors gang, they're killing some guy with an axe. And then they start again. Oh, Rodrigo was nice. He went with Maria to the supermarket. And then they start picking on both of them. And then the guy keeps saying, "Let me $5, fucker." Paul comes out of nowhere, punches the guy in the face. And then a kid, again, I think there's deleted scenes to this movie. Because remember the little black kid? He showed up three times in this movie.
Yes.
Michael Jackson. Young Michael Jackson. Right?
Young Michael Jackson.
So when Murray throws the ice cream
in the ice cream.
Yes. To him. Yeah. Okay.
No, so you see young Michael Jackson in this part. He's like hiding behind like a post, which it's the same post he was hiding in at the end of the movie, which is kind of weird. They probably shot it all at the same time. But he's like, right on, man. And Paul goes, fist pump in the air, like, yeah. But dude, like,
wait, is that the same post that he's hiding? By the way, the post isn't that big, so the hiding behind a post is not really working. But is that the one that when you're like all the bad guys are running past him and he's still like hiding behind the same post?
It's the same thing. Maybe he lives there.
But behind a post?
I don't know. Maybe, you know, times are tough. Look at the neighborhood. He might have that. Might be nicer than some of those other apartments. You see where the gang lives? Where do they sleep?
Well, they own a whole building, it looks like.
Yeah, with like, there's holes in the roof. Like, do they all just sleep like, you know, camping sleepover style on the floor?
Yeah, you know what, though? It doesn't seem like they sleep at all, though, because they're doing a lot of crime during the day and at night.
And they're on a lot of drugs.
Yeah, they are. And they're constantly running. They're always running. They're in great shape.
They are. And they are scared of Charles Bronson. Because even at this part, they're kind of like complaining to Fracken, like, oh my God, who's this guy? And he's like, oh, the guy from the jail cell. And so I wrote, Catherine Davis is thirsty. God, well, who am I? Why would I write the word thirsty for that? But yes, for some reason I did. Because she came to the ghetto to ask to have dinner with her grandpa.
Yeah, right? And then they just walk out casually from it, like all shit's going on all around him. And they're just walking down the street.
Now, did we get to the part where he was being ambushed and he throws his gun?
What? And then he threw his gun.
He did. That didn't look like he dove. He threw his gun as he was diving. I wrote that down. I go, why did he throw his gun?
Yeah, I don't think we're on that part. Yeah, I think it's pretty close. Oh no! What we're on right now is when he gets Wildy. So Wildy's there.
Okay, he didn't get Wildy. Okay.
Yeah, so he finally got Wildy. And this was, we just talked about the rape scene. That was like right when he got Wildy, like right around that part, because the giggler was a big part in that rape scene. So I guess that's why it set it up perfectly. So he goes to Bennett. He goes, I'm going to go get ice cream. This is America, isn't it? And dude, that friggin' scene when he has the Nikon camera, which obviously paid to be in this movie. And dude, that whole that giggler scene is so awesome, man. I love that.
It's a death scene, right?
Yeah. That's he shoots him once in the back.
That was, I'll tell you, if you've ever played any kind of first-person shooter, that's like a rage quit moment where he's got like the little dinky gun, and this guy is like a mile away, and he just offs him. You're just like, that can't happen.
Wait, did you say dinky gun?
Well, no, Wildy was a good gun, but it was still like a pistol. Like, it's still... Am I right? It was still like a pistol type gun.
That thing was massive. That was huge.
It used rifle bullets.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, it had the big bullets on it, but it wasn't a sniper rifle.
No, he was far, but again, every shot is a one shot kill. So I mean,
Charles Bronson. Yeah,
it's Charles Bronson.
It's the bullets, man. It's whatever he's putting in the bullets. It's mad.
And the giggler is super fast, so he was able to catch him while he's running.
And then the gang, dude, Fracken gets so pissed. He said they had no business killing the giggler. And I'm like, they had every friggin' right to kill this guy. The guy just raped Maria. He robs old women and runs away all the time. Yeah.
He seems like the worst of the gang. Like, he does the most damage, the giggler. Throughout the whole movie, he's constantly on the street, robbing, punching, doing whatever. Like, he's one of like the worst ones.
And he seems pretty successful in his attempts. Other people, when it seems like Fracken gives them their first chance, they don't do too well. But you know, my favorite person in this movie is the old lady in the robe, in the pink robe.
Oh.
She comes outside and she was so jacked up that the giggler died. She's like, yeah, I think she was like, I think she was waving like a hairbrush. She was like, yeah. And then the next morning, how about this? How ballsy is this? Ed Lauder shows up, Stryker. He gets out of the car, and she runs and, like, pushes him. She's like, who cares? He should be dead. I'm like, dude, what the freak? This lady's going to get arrested. She just shoved a cop. Because he didn't deck her. That would have been great, dude. Big fight scene between them two.
Well, her purse was robbed earlier, right?
Yes.
Wasn't she? Yeah. So that's so yeah. Because she that's and the giggler's the one that stole it.
Yep.
Mm, yeah. Good point. Good point.
So here we are on the first date, Paul's date. Andrew, how would you rate Paul's lines? Because man, it's rough.
Yeah, he. it's just I can't.
Yeah, but when
it should have just went straight to the sex and then just blow her up in the car. Like, really, I don't understand why that took so long. They drew it out a little too long. And now, I mean, especially after seeing the first two, you're like, you know, this is not going to end well for this chick. So what are we really wasting time for? He's definitely not interested in her. Maybe a little bit. But
And when you see her there, she looks so much younger now.
Oh, yeah.
You know, it's like ridiculous.
And his line, here's are two of the lines that I just could not stop laughing about. He goes, the guy at the liquor store said, this is very good wine. And then she goes, I made chicken. It's the only thing I'm good at cooking. And he goes, chicken. Chicken's good. And I'm like, this guy's like some old guy. And then it was like, dude, they were talking for like, how long had they really talked in this whole movie? A few lines outside of the police station when she showed up, a few lines there. She goes, I wish I knew more about you. And then she starts talking about some weird shit. And then she goes, well, what do you like? And he's like, I like opera. And then 5 minutes later, she goes, you don't like opera, do you? And he's like, no, I don't. I'm like, why the fuck would he lie about that? I don't understand that whole part. He didn't want her to get close. I get it. But just say like, hey, I just want the poon. And that's it.
This whole scene made me uncomfortable. He seemed too old for her, the whole scene, like, I mean, when the first time they kissed, like, like, you know, if they were like close to the same age in a normal movie, you know, they'd be like Frenching tongues all over the place. He gave her a kiss on the lips, like, you know, like, all right, goodbye. Like, it was like there was no, like, they didn't show any, just because he's too old. Like, it just didn't look right. It made me uncomfortable.
Do you think when he's reading the script, he's like, guys, nobody's going to buy this. I'm 30 years older than her. It's kind of weird.
I'm the one. I don't know if he was thinking of me. I really did think she was old until that. Oh, I'm watching it right now. I got it lined up. And I see that creepy kiss. And oh, my God.
Right? It's like a weird.
He's like old wrinkles. Yeah. And then he's just, oh, man, that's disturbing.
And then no, you go.
No, go ahead.
No, I was going to say, right after this, so it ends with that terrible kiss. And then this is like when Fracken is so pissed off. And this is when he gets his army of guys and he gives them the drugs and he's making them all snort it. Dude, it's crazy. When they do that faraway shot and all the people in the gang are snorting something and he goes, hi, 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 hi. And he makes that guy, I forget the guy's name. God, the Cuban, maybe the guy's name was. It was like some country that he called me. He's like, he's gonna kill tonight, yeah. And then, dude, that's why I love Paul. Just like I love like Dirty Harry. Like I love Rambo. I love all those guys. Those guys are like assassins. These guys are just like you or me, Andrew. Well, Andrew kind of looks like Charles Bronson. He's like a combination of them. But no, he's not a professional fighter. Even when he's running away, when he gets tricked by Fracken to follow him, and then it was like an ambush. Dude, when he's running, he looks so unathletic. And then when he runs and he goes around the barrel, he like goes into the wall, and that's when he like kind of looks like he tosses the gun. But these are the guys that you could be like, you know, that could happen. That could be a normal, like, it is a normal 64-year-old guy. Not a guy that'd be taking everybody headshots. Boom, 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 boom.
Yeah, but don't forget, I mean, you know, just because you can't run doesn't make you, you know, not a badass. Because look at Steven Seagal. Steven Seagal can't run. You ever see him run?
No, I have. Yeah, he runs like...
runs worse. I mean, he runs... So, I mean, you know, like, I just think, again, he's 64 years old. He's an architect. Without seeing the other movies, you would think he would have some kind of background. And he doesn't. And he's just a mess. And he doesn't get hurt. He doesn't get a bruise on him. Even when he gets stabbed, he's wearing the vest. So, you know, yeah. he doesn't get hurt. Like, throughout the whole movie, you have how many gang members are going after him? Not one scratch.
No, you're right. No, he does get shot. So other movies, you never see the bad guys get, like, harmed. But you said he had the vest on, so he didn't do it.
Yeah.
But it was like, he did, obviously. He could have died if he wasn't wearing it. Other movies that we've seen, like all these action movies, Nothing, not even a scratch on all these guys. But now I guess that showed that he's not the best. But dude, that scene's insane, dude. When he chases that guy, when that guy chases Bronson, he's in the alleyway. He has the gang coming out like rats. They come at all, he's cornered, can't go anywhere. And then what does he do? He goes up.
And no one, you know, he sends one guy after him.
I know.
But like, you're right. You had the whole gang there. Like, there's like a, they're easily, they could have gotten them. They gave him time to climb up.
I know. And Andrew, if you're reading in your apartment, which that guy was very interesting, I could probably like talk about that guy's room because he was reading a book. And so Bronson comes in first. Nothing. He doesn't even really move. And then the next guy comes through and he just keeps, Andrew, could you keep reading that there's people flying in your window?
Well, you have to figure this probably happens on an everyday basis. With these guys.
Like,
this
I was thinking that
not out of the ordinary. This probably this probably happened 10 minutes ago. Someone else came through his window, and he's just like, ah, shit. You know, he probably just opens his window from now on, just and his doors let people just run through.
Well, he figured, you know, they probably break it, so I might as well just leave it open anyway.
Yeah, that's true.
Because they do break a lot of windows in this movie, so you know, he's probably the smartest guy there.
So this is the scene that it's funny when. I see this movie so many times. When you watch a movie taking notes, it changes everything because you're picking up different things. So when Bronson waits for the guy on the roof, he has like a pipe. He hits the guy a couple times and then just tosses him right off. And then you see quite possibly the worst dummy in movie history.
There are a few in this one.
There's more. No, there's other dummies.
I think so. Because every fall would like look like it was a perfect fall. Each one, like I thought there were some dummies later on too.
Well, it could look perfect with a person. This one, it's like flailing. No, because the whole time I was like, man, maybe it was their budget. But now if you...
It was only a $10 million budget. I did see that.
Yeah, no, I saw that too. But
$10
million. It was pretty low.
They probably spent most of the money. Bronson probably got $7 million.
No, he actually got $1.5 million.
Oh, that's it? Wow.
Yeah, he got $1.5 million.
So they probably spent $7 million on the explosions because everything exploded in this movie. And no
lots of fire.
The dummy budget got cut because that guy looked nothing. Dude, as soon as he went off the building and they did that cut, it just showed something like free falling and spinning in midair.
Well, there's a lot. There's a scene where that you had the. I mean, it's a little later on, but when they're running out of the house, there's a husband and wife on fire. You can see on the woman, it looked like she had that drippy stuff.
The gel, I wrote that down. Yeah, it's so bad. And what a way to go! Obviously, you're burning, you're on fire, and then you get shot with an Uzi.
Well, actually, that's probably saving them. Like I'm the pain. I'd rather that. But you did see the gel dripping off her face. I can't believe it.
So then right after this scene, he's kind of like questioning himself because there's other people, you know, dying. And then even he talks to the cop again, Ed Lauder. And he kind of basically says like, hey, man, you know, kind of like take it easy a little bit because there's a lot of, you know, big body count. He wants to make sure that he can get an arrest. I don't understand why Paul wouldn't help out. Like, just give him one of the guys, you know, like, instead of killing him, tie him up, you know, he has drugs on him, give him an arrest.
Because he probably figures that he's going to go to jail and he's going to get out anyway. So listen, I mean, he's a vigilante. He doesn't keep anyone alive. Everybody he goes after, he kills. Yeah. So, you know, by giving someone up, that's one less death that he can give.
You know what really? Well,
the only thing is, he's not personally... None of these guys, there's no personal relationship with. So whether he did kill him or just arrest him, it really wouldn't have made a difference because these guys didn't rape and kill his wife. They didn't rape and kill his daughter. They didn't, you know, rape and kill his housewife. They killed Charlie. Not all these guys killed Charlie. But I mean,
doesn't he make mention that they never found the killers who killed his wife or in the first movie? Right? He never...
This is true, yeah.
So I just think he's just anybody who just does that kind of stuff on the street, he just wants dead.
He just wants them.
So
he just knows how bad these cops are. Then they're not going to do anything. You know, he has to take it into his own hands. Obviously, the cops are doing something. Remember, Ed Lauder, I wish somebody can take care of him. Well, you can, asshole. That's your job. But no. And then this is the part. And then this is the line, the comeback line that you mentioned earlier. He goes, hey, it's like roaches. You have to kill them all. And dude, this part coming up that I'm about to talk to was really rough. When he
would you kill a roach with your finger, though?
On my finger? No.
That's what he did.
I know. He smacks it.
It's disgusting.
Ugh. I hope he washed his hands. He like goes and eats a sandwich right away. No, when Fracken kills Emil's wife.
Oh, where he calls her? Where he calls him and his, that was rough. And you were kind of expecting that to happen earlier in the movie when he promised that he was going to kill an old lady. You're like, oh, yeah, like maybe when he gets out, not 40 minutes later.
You know, I didn't even think about that. Holy cow.
And then I love the shot when he's looking up at his apartment and it racks the focus and it goes and shows the guy in there with the Fracken with the phone to his ear. And then when the camera cuts, the wife's already dead, throat slit. I'm like,
throat slit. Yeah. That was rough.
I have a question. How does Fracken have everybody's phone number?
Oh, yeah. He called Charlie's house.
He calls Charlie's house. He calls Bronson. He calls the store. He calls he calls everywhere.
He knows in my heart, too. So I guess, you know, Yellow Pages. He just memorized.
But see, this is where I thought maybe the police were involved because he was somehow getting everybody's number.
But phone books were a lot more common then too, right? Yeah. I mean, like
they were
probably a harder way to, you know, to unlist your number from the phone books.
But you're going
to
tell me there's not more than one person with the same name? I mean, this is New York City. I mean, even a Terminator had to go through a bunch of Sarah Connors to finally find Sarah Connor.
Yes, yes.
He gets the wrong Charlie. I want my money. Oh, I'm sorry, Charlie. Ring.
Paul Kershaw should have picked up the phone and be like, "Hello, right now." That would have been amazing. And it wouldn't have been like good cinema if they showed him in that apartment, like after slicing the wife's throat. And he's like, what's the numbers? He's going through a Rolodex. And then he's like flipping through. He's like, oh, you know, I got to call her back. She was really like just going through it. God, but that's part just, oh my God, dude. When you get into that, like he's calling, he answers and he hears like, hey, your wife's not doing too good. You better come up here.
And then he sees him in the window.
Oh.
And he's running there. I mean, yeah.
And this is right after this is the Paul sex scene. And the one thing that was mind blowing about it was when he gets there, she goes, I'm moving to Binghamton to stay with my sister for a few weeks. I want to get out of the city. And she goes, but I had to see you one more time before I left. And I'm like, what the hell is going on right now?
Yeah, she's kind of lame. I mean, I don't think she had a lot of boyfriends. She knows this guy for 5 minutes.
Yeah, she's in love with him. And she even says, maybe you can come visit.
But she's spending time with all these douchebag cops, I mean, and these criminals. So, I mean, Paul is probably like the only decent guy she's come across.
But she doesn't really know him. The guy was arrested. Like, she met him in jail. You know, like, does she really know him? You know, I mean, really.
And she even references when it was on their first date when she talks about how much she hates, or maybe it was right there. She talks about how much she hates her job. She's like, I have to deal with these creeps. And then she's like, no offense. She doesn't know. Like you said, she doesn't know him. And she just,
no.
I'm in love with you. I told my sister about you. My mom's going to come here. What if the mom was there at the place? Like, oh, hi, Paul. And they were the same age. They were like, hey, okay, let's talk about Elvis.
So they have sex and then they go in the car together, right?
Yeah,
and he goes, they're going out to eat.
So yeah, the first stop he goes to is the post office.
I know, right? Couldn't he do that by himself?
That was weird. I mean, that was a whole, you know. And he's been keen to everything. He walks out of her house with her. He doesn't see the crappy car across the street that's like watching him.
Yeah,
he doesn't, you know.
And we didn't mention the, so it's Fracken and his, I guess his new number two followed Paul when he went on his date.
Right. So they were waiting outside for him, but he didn't, Bronson, when he walked out, he didn't even turn his head. Like they were literally parked across the street.
They were, yeah. They were like looking, like you could have looked out the window and be like, oh shit.
No. Yeah. Yeah. Nothing. Well, he did just get laid, though, so maybe he just, he's not thinking about it.
It's that few seconds right afterwards where he's just like,
Well, this movie takes place how long after the second one?
Oh.
Probably 5 years, four okay, years.
Okay, so it's probably 5 years.
That was it for the last time he had sex. Could be longer. His wife died in the first one, so that'd be 11 years. He was just like...
Okay. No,
second one, he had a girlfriend, though. He kept that.
Oh, yeah. All right. Dude, this scene is so insane. This is why I questioned the budget after the dummy scene. When he goes in there and the whole way the music changes, the Jimmy Page soundtrack, when they're locking eyes. And then at that point, I'm like, man, Paul's like hooked now because he had sex with her. A few minutes ago, he was like trying to get rid of her and just say, hey, go to Binghamton, you know, whatever. And then he goes into the place, the music changes, and dude, Fracken comes over, punches her in the face. The other guy puts the car in neutral. Ah, oh, just sad.
And just a little fender bender, and
a huge explosion.
Boom! Just, you know,
like, does that happen often? Like the blow up like that?
And she wakes up pretty quick, so she was knocked out for like 3 seconds. And then the part that was wild: he runs down the hill. He sees the car on fire. And then he looks like almost like he's going to walk away because he has to ask, you know, he's going to have to like answer questions. I know he talks to Stryker in the apartment, like the next scene. And then that's like fucked up too. So Stryker goes, I want to take you into protective custody. And he goes, oh, I don't need that. I got to make sure I got to finish the job. And then when he walks outside, he goes, take him. As soon as he walks out. And then I'm thinking he's like in a hotel somewhere. They keep him in jail.
I don't understand. Like, they want this crime gone or these gangs gone, but they keep restricting him because the cops are not doing anything. Like, what's the point of putting him just to protect him? That's what they're thinking? Like, does he really need protection?
I don't think so.
And he doesn't seem that, by the way, he didn't seem that remorseful when the woman died.
Oh, no. He could care less. He
was almost like, oh, good. Now I can concentrate what I was doing.
That would have been great at the end if, obviously, it ends pretty quick. But it would have been great if at the end he, like, had that showdown and said, this is for Catherine, this is for Charlie, or something like that. He didn't mention her for the rest of the movie at all.
He could care less. He didn't, yeah.
See, I think it would have been cool if you find out that one of those gang members are the one that killed his wife.
Whoa.
See, that would have been like, you know, that would have been a good, you know.
If you had a Jeff Goldblum reappearance in that, yeah, that would have been good. Like a cameo.
They're like, hey, Jeff, we got to reach out to you. on your contract that you signed before you're a big star, and, you know, you're going to have to be in this movie. You're contractually obligated. You want to hear something crazy about the first one? Yeah. Andrew, you have a kid, so I'm sure you realize, or maybe now that I say it, you will. So in the first one, when Jeff Goldblum's being a creep in the store and he's doing like the tongue to the cashier.
Yeah.
Did you realize who the cashier was?
No.
It was Maria from Sesame Street.
No. Dude. Oh, that's rough.
he was a guest star like in the 80s because I was watching my daughter. And I'm like, did they talk about that?
Wait a second. Maria is still on Sesame Street?
Yeah.
She's still on Sesame Street.
Well, yeah. Well, this is an 80s episode where that he was on it. No, I think she's still on it. Yeah.
Is that where he cast her for that role? He's like, hey, you know, we got a movie shooting. Do you want to come? Really?
Yeah.
Wait, can we go back to Maria for a second? So she was on when I was a young kid.
Yeah.
So how old is she? Like 85?
All those people on there. They've swapped out. They're not on as often.
So Gordon, is Gordon still there?
He was there until 3 years ago, but he comes back. Guest appearances.
How old are they? It got to be like old.
And they got to make good money, man. They've been doing the same gig. Well, I guess it is public. It's a government job, so maybe it's not as good. But now they've been on TV for 40 years.
Wow, that's amazing.
Crazy. How the hell did we start talking? Oh, because I was talking about Jeff.
Maria. Yeah. Jeff Goldman.
But that scene, when I saw it, I'm like, dude, he's doing the tongue thing. And then we're watching them three in a scene with Grover. And I'm like, weird, man. That's just weird. So this is where Bennett, he gets pissed off because the bad guys are throwing bricks through his windows. And, oh, no, they just blew up a store. Paul's in custody. All hell is breaking loose. Mm-hmm. Michael Bay has taken over this movie.
Oh, the last 15 minutes, it's all Michael Bay.
Oh, my gosh. But, no, so Bennett is thinking about using the gun, And then he goes, let me talk to Paul. Paul, you there? Knock, knock, knock. Paul doesn't answer. And then he's like, you know what? Screw it. I'm going to try to do it myself. And we talked about it before. I felt bad for him. He had a chance to like mow all these guys down.
Oh, they were all lined up two in a row. You really thought he was going to pop at least one off. But no.
But I did think it was hysterical when they realized it wasn't working. They all turned around at the same time.
And then, Jamie, this is something that we talked about when we did our best sequels of all time, the top 10 list that we did, was so Paul's allowed to get out because Bennett's in the hospital. And Bennett, they have a kind of Rocky II scene.
They did.
He's like, Paul, you got to take care of those bastards. And then Paul sneaks out the window. And, dude, this friggin' movie changes, and it's the best. The last 20 minutes, amazing. It is.
By the way, hospital windows don't open. They don't open. So I don't know how he escaped out of that, but just, you know, I wanted to put it out there.
Wait, have you tried to get out of a hospital before? No,
they don't open. They don't open. They're locked.
But how do you know?
I've been in hospitals before.
But I'm saying, what made you think that first time? You know what? I'm going to get some.
Maybe the room was hot and I wanted to open the window. Why are you getting so angry? But this becomes like a commando. Like, it reminded me of Commando.
Yeah.
He just goes on a tear, and this is like unbelievable. Like, this is awesome.
Wait, hold on. So right when he's meeting Bennett, when he's going to Bennett's hospital, he meets that same doctor from from Tonto, and he goes, he just has a few fractures,
but yeah,
I think he's gonna pull through. And immediately I went, holy shit, he's dead too.
I was saying they got to start finding a new doctor, because this is like his responses are horrendous.
Bad bedside manner. Could you imagine if he opened the door? Bet it was a skeleton. God, that would have been so amazing. So I don't know. This part was mind blowing. So I don't. If anybody listening is in a gang, please email me doug@sequelsonly.com, because I want to know the answer to my question I'm going to pose right now. So do gangs just call like a gang HR? Dude, when Fracken picks up the phone, he's like, hey, man, I'm going to need more guys. as many as you can send. I'm going to need a lot of guys. And I'm like, what the what?
Yeah, where's he calling?
Who is he calling?
You know what? At this point, I'm still thinking the police are involved, and I thought he was calling the police. I thought he was calling the captain and saying, "All right, I got we got to contain him. We got to bring more guys in." That's what I thought, because all this time I'm still thinking they're douchey.
That actually would have been a great plot twist if the cops were in on it. You know, after the first one where they let him go, this would have been a great. It would have came all the way around from the first one where the cops are like, all right, now we're going to get this sucker, but we're going to get the creeps to help us. That would have been fantastic.
And that's what I thought was going to happen. Because I figured at this point, like, all right, you know what? They let him loose just so he could kill a few guys to show the cops are doing something out there. And then, you know, but meanwhile, you know, they really want to contain him. They just wanted him to show that something's going on. And I thought they were going to come back and help him at this point. I didn't realize they're calling another gang for hire.
Yeah, and especially the fact we talked about the one plot hole from earlier was that the two cops came and took the Jewish couple's old Jewish couple's gun. And it's like, why? So that would have made sense if they were like in on it. And then at the very end of the movie, they pin everything on Paul. Paul gets sent away. He's in jail. That'd be good too if he went to jail and then Bennett breaks all the old people go and break him out. They tie up a truck, they pull the wall out, and God, dude, this scene I love that Rodrigo was the right-hand man holding the cardboard box of bullets.
Oh,
dude, he was just frigging mowing so many people down.
What kind of gun was that he had?
The zip gun. It was basically, so I Googled it. It's basically just like two metal rods, and I don't even know it's real. Like, you really do it, but you put in shotgun shells and you just do that. The thing that I had to say is shotguns aren't accurate. So I think this would be a lot less accurate because it's a short barrel. Somehow he was shooting from like 50, 60 yards away, guys in windows.
And it seems like it's very light because it was so small, like skinny. Like, yeah. It seemed like something very cool. I just never seen anything like it.
Yeah. So one of the coolest parts, so many cool parts this movie, but I love the other people in the apartment building How about how excited they are when they're watching the news? The Jewish husband has like a smirk on his face when that they've seen all the people die on the news, all the bad guys. They're just like shitting and grin, so happy. A lot of people are, because, you know, obviously, you know, things are changing and hopefully for the better in this neighborhood. But dude, we talked about how bad the cops were at shooting. How about the gangs? Because there's a lot of times guys stood out, you know, Rodrigo and Paul stood right out in the open in an alleyway and not one shot.
Did the gangs really have that many guns? I can't remember them shooting all that
much. No, they had a lot of guns.
Did they?
Yeah, they had. I mean, well, they had and guns.
Before the war actually started, they don't have it doesn't seem like they have a lot of guns. A lot of knives, right?
Well, they didn't need the guns though before the war. You know, yeah, at that point, where they need guns for it, but they realized they needed. Plus, don't forget they had the extra gang that come in, so that maybe they're a gang of guns. Yeah, you know, I just don't understand how the neighborhood all of a sudden have weapons and they know how to use it.
Yeah.
Because it became like a Three Amigos, like where the town comes together and, like, you know, they take on the bad guys. That's what happened. And like all of a sudden, they're doing some damage, which makes me think that they could have done this all the time. Like, they didn't need Charles Bronson.
They needed the confidence. I mean, I love when they use the chain and they trip like three of the bikers, and the way they run out, they're like bang, bang, bang. And, like, they run out and like, oh, dude, that was so cool.
See, this whole like last 15 minutes to me was very comical. It was good action, but it was just so comical. Of like, again, the scene with the chain, the people falling off the buildings were just ridiculous. Alex Winter falling it looked like he did like a belly flop in a pool. That's the way he fell.
Oh my God. And then the gang members, like the guy that's right here, I have my chair in the way kind of, but he's in the movie for 5 seconds and they show the new gang show up and they're just like sitting there looking at their grenades, which I don't know, but he's picking his teeth with the grenade. And I'm like, dude, what's this guy's story? How did he get to the point of his life that he's using a grenade to pick his teeth?
And they're all happy to see each other, like the gangs.
Oh, yeah! it's like happy days.
They're hugging.
Yeah, right? and I'm just watching now. Now, young Michael Jackson is back at his post. Yep. And he will not leave that. Like, these guys are flocking around him. He will not. There's something with that post. There's some really weird connection with that. Because he's not running away. He's just like, I don't know. there's something to that post. You're right. I think it's his...
It's his home.
He has to live there. There's nowhere for him to go.
Or maybe there's like a spell on him and he can't leave that. Maybe his house was there. That was the post for the mailbox. The house got blown up by the gang and the many of the explosions. And he's just like, I'm going to stay home. My dad said he would be home. I'm just going to wait here until he gets here. He's not coming. He's not coming home.
Yikes.
So Wildy, we obviously saw the power of the gun earlier in the movie, but this gun somehow, maybe he turned it up a little bit, because dude, he shoots people and they fly back 10 feet, but the one guy gets shot and he like goes 5 feet into a wall and flails his body into it. And there's blood everywhere. I'm like, holy shit, this gun is insane.
Doesn't he show that it does, like he twists something on his gun that can, I guess, give more power? He was talking when he was putting it together. When he first got it, he did mention that early on. Like, it does something. Like, he was I forget how he described it.
Oh, that'd be
nice. I did also notice that a lot of times in this movie, people get shot in like one place, but blood comes all over the place from somewhere else. You know, they could get shot in the leg and like blood in their face all over there, you know, like it's throughout the whole movie.
Oh my God. And so we were talking about the couple that was on fire earlier. So there's another building there's a lot of buildings that get on fire in the last 15 minutes, but there's one that they show the building and they show people around it. And then they show friggin' two people jump off, real people, no dummies. And I'm like, why couldn't they have used that kind of thing in that one scene? The other scene was so cool when Paul threw that guy off, but when I saw these people diving from a burning building, I'm like, holy shit, they risked somebody's life for like B-roll. It wasn't even anybody's house of a character that we knew. It was just like a random like 10-second shot.
Yeah, but maybe that scene was filmed first and those guys didn't make it. So they were supposed to jump from, you know, before, so they had to use a dummy.
They were the jump guys. Every jump guy died, and they were out of it, you know?
And they're like, you know what? We can't risk it anymore. We're running out of actors. We got to use a dummy now.
Yeah, they made that phone call to, like, HR, like, fracking does with the gangs. And they're like, yeah, you know, we're getting a couple jump guys that jump off the roofs. And they're like, oh, what happened to the 7 that we sent you? They didn't make it.
They just jumped to work today.
Holy shit, dude.
I think even... Even the other weapons seem like they've become beasts. I mean, these Molotov cocktails. He takes out the whole first floor of that convenience store. It's just from, I think it was one Molotov cocktail. I mean, maybe there's a second one that I didn't see. But wow, even the baddies' guns and weapons are really, there's an uptick in their destructiveness.
There is, yeah. I think it's because it's the third film. For the last 15 minutes, it all gets cranked up. So Paul, we talked about him getting shot and stabbed, and he has Kevlar, so he's good. But he could have died twice in the last 15 minutes. Oh, three times, actually. He gets saved by Rodrigo. We talked about the shot that he did. And, dude, these two scenes back-to-back are so amazing because you have the music playing. Jimmy Page here. It just sounds so cool. And then Rodrigo's out of bullets, so he has to leave. And then Paul's about to get shot again. And, dude, Captain Stryker, dude, their scene reminded me of, like, a video game. Because they were, like, going down the street and
tag team in it.
Yes.
Well, I think it's the birth of the buddy cop movie. You know, I mean, that's basically what it was. It became a buddy cop. Like, they were protecting each other. Like, it was, but that's where it was, like, to me, it's, like, a surprise in the whole movie. You're thinking it might have been corrupt, and all of a sudden, he comes to save the day.
And that was great, dude. That whole scene was awesome. And one thing I noticed when I was watching it before... So Paul's actually behind a mailbox, kind of guarding himself, shooting these guys, missing a lot. Again, he's missing. And Stryker's in the middle of the open, wide open, shooting the guys. And then they're like, huh. They're like looking at each other. Like he gives them like a look. And then a guy gets up. Paul shoots another guy. And I took a photo of it. I should put it in my background. But they show the blood get onto the camera lens. I paused it right at that part. I'm like, dude, that was pretty cool. The way like the blood pack just like exploded in the charge just at that point. But dude, Paul could have died so many times towards the end of this movie, but he was lucky. He had little angels or Rodrigo or Tonto and Louder, you know, looking out for him.
That was a really bad choice to have Ed Lauder be the tag team partner. He could have had that little old Jewish guy come down, you know, run out with him. Like they really should, or the, you know, the old lady. I don't know. I
think he was so unlikable, you know, that I think like, it's like you don't want to cheer for him at the end. You know, he wasn't a likable character. I think I agree 100%. I think if the Jewish guy came down, that would have been key.
That would be really cool. That'd be a funny movie.
It would erase it from an A to an A plus. I mean, it would have put him like that, that extra little bit.
I agree. So you would think all these gangs that they called in, when they showed up, they were like, hey, the main guy we're going after is this 64-year-old guy. They're like, 64-year-old guy, you guys can't take that out? Yeah, no, just don't worry. Leather jacket, you know, salt and pepper hair. Because when Paul runs out of bullets and Fracken sees him go back to his apartment, there is a whole group of the gang members that run right past him. One has a baseball bat within like steps of him. And I'm like, why wouldn't that guy take him out? But dude, the end scene of this movie, it's mind blowing because Paul, again, you talked about it earlier, Jamie. When he left the apartment after getting laid, maybe his mind was in a funk, knocking the cobwebs out. And maybe he just was off guard because in that he has his back to the door while he's loading his gun. And Fracken was ready to shoot him. Boom, Ed Lauder saves him twice, two times.
Yeah.
And Andrew, what'd you think for an ending of a movie? What was this like watching it, man?
This was the, I would say, now that after seeing the first and second one, this is probably the best ending of the three. It's the most satisfying.
Oh, yeah.
It was so much better than if he just shot him or like, you know, pushed him out the window. It was everything that you needed to happen all in one single anti-tank bullet or whatever the hell that was. Oh, it was just, the buildup was great. It was unbelievable.
See, I feel though, it almost feels a little rushed because the way the movie just ended with the credits. It just ended. The movie just ended.
Oh, I know. That was really confusing.
Yeah. So like, I feel like they squeezed it all. I mean, it was a good ending and it was satisfying, but like, I feel like they were maybe running low on tape and they're like, all right, we got to end it real quick because I've never seen a movie just end the way this one did.
Yeah. It did end quick. They ended it. At least they threw in all that stuff. He's like, hey, Kirstie, I'll give you a few minutes so you can get out of here. And then I'm like, maybe somebody else is still alive. Obviously, the Bang Gang guys. And again, wouldn't you think they would have some debris or damage from that thing exploding? Ed Lauder was 5 feet away.
Yeah, there's no way that's going off, blowing that guy out through the window, and there's nothing inside with those two guys at all. I would say they would almost all blow up. I mean, you know, that was a power. If it's going to shoot a human through a wall, you know, to go out, it's going to be powerful enough to, you know, hurt them, and neither one, you know, had a scratch.
That was the first thing in this movie I think was not believable. And, you know, that was a minute. That was an hour, you know, and 27 minutes. First time I was like, all right, come on. No, but how did the people in the gang, they had like the ADR in the background, like voiceovers, and they're like, oh my God, that was a serious explosion. You hear a girl go, oh my God, he's dead. I know his body was burning. There was a burning body. But you couldn't tell who it was, but somehow they knew right away.
Yeah, I mean, the blast from the window, it was just debris. It was just like bits of everything. Like, there's no body. You would have no idea what the hell happened in the apartment. You just see an explosion, and automatically that chick, I don't know, maybe she must have known. Maybe she smelled them.
Well, like, they probably saw him run in there, so they knew.
Or she smelled like the Draco Noir. He always wore so much of it. That's why he was so flammable and he was on fire. No, but this movie is kind of like Vampires because he dies and then the rest of them are like, you know what? It's not worth it anymore. I'm not going to kill anymore. And they just leave. All of them just like leave like a vampire movie.
Yeah, but how many times you see like it just seemed – in general, when the leader of a gang or leader of, you know, of the bad guys dies, they're like, all right, you know, like, we really didn't want to do it all this time. He made us. So, you know, we're really good people.
Oh, my God. Well, that's Death Wish 3. And that was a blast, guys. But
that was my favorite of the three. I will say
that. It was?
It was my favorite. It was just so much fun. The first one was unsettling because you're getting used to the character. The second one is disturbing, but then there's a revenge factor. This one was just pure fun. There was nothing holding back. There was no emotional moments to drag it down. It was bang, bang, blowing shit up. Fantastic. My kind of movie.
It was like the sequels that we expect to see. Like, you're not going to have too much more of a storyline. You can add like a little bit of a new character here and there. But dude, you're right. The first one, it's kind of more like a drama. He's a guy that's scared to use a gun. Like, he uses a roll of quarters and a sock the first time that. He fights off.
I wish she brought that back. That would have been fantastic. I love that weapon. Wait.
You're telling me he was scared to use the gun in the first one?
Yes, he was.
After and his first kill, he threw up, remember? He was like, oh, bleh.
Oh, he's grown up a lot since then.
Yes. 100 bodies later. He easily killed 100 people in this movie. But Jamie, what did you think? This is your first, you know, time that was your first, your Dirty Harry with Sudden Impact?
Yeah, you know, I mean, I've seen Charles Bronson. He was great in The Dirty Dozen. You know, I've seen a lot of his movies. Never saw The Death Wish, but I knew about all of them. You know, it's hard to judge it because I haven't seen the first two. I would assume the first one probably has the best story, you know, the origin of his character. This one just seems like, all right, you know what? We've done two stories that are kind of similar. We just got to just go balls to the wall and just, you know, let him go out, and, you know, in style. So this is like a fun movie. I thought it was silly. I thought it was a little silly, but it was so entertaining. I mean, it's Charles Bronson. You know, it's funny seeing like how the tough guys were back then. Yeah. You know, to compare to today, you know, there's no hand-to-hand combat. It's all guns. You know, there's you know, like, so it's just, it was very enjoyable. And if you've never seen Death Wish, definitely worth watching, but it makes me want to see the origin of the character. So I need to go watch it, the first two.
Yeah. They're all on Amazon Prime 1 through 5. Jamie texted me and he goes, there's five of these. And I was like, I hope you forgot a word there. You should say, like, there's only five. There should be more of these than Fast and the Furious movies.
I can't imagine 4 and 5 because he kind of looks old in this movie. So, I mean, if he made 2 more after this, I mean, now we're getting he's got to be in the 70s.
I can't wait. Let's do another podcast with those two. I'm gonna go watch it. Oh, right now.
Let's meet up. I'm gonna reach out to people for 4 and 5. We have to do that because those would be good to do. But so I love this movie. So that's totally, like, you have to watch this. The action alone, the lines, just, I don't know, it has a cool feel. You know, just like the ghettos of New York was so shitty in the 80s. Everything was crazy, and you just see, like, a bunch of normal people. Besides, obviously, Paul, just shooting people. You have an old Jewish couple. You have a bunch of, like, random people shooting bikers on the I don't know. It was good.
And, so, and the gang was just so comical. I mean, like, the way they're always laughing, giggling, and just, like, doing stupid crap. Like, you know, if they met up with, like the Warriors gang, they get their ass kicked.
Yes. So one thing I found online, I'm not going to read the whole thing, but so there was a New York Times critic. His name is Walter Goodman. He ridiculed the film's lack of realism, particularly the violent crime. And then one of the lines was, there is not a moment of credibility in this movie, and the ending is sheer chaos. And I'm like, you know what, dude? That is what we love. That was so amazing, the end of that movie.
See, I hate when critics will say, you know, oh, it's not realistic, or that's the whole point of the movie. Like, yeah. You know, like, if you want to see realistic, it's not going to be as fun. You know, you got to see this. So put it overboard. I mean, don't watch any Rambo movies.
Don't watch King Kong. I don't believe that an ape can climb to the top of. Of course.
Wait. So you don't believe an ape can climb, but you believe there's an ape that big. Like that. So the climbing is the unrealistic part.
Well, that's what Walter Goodman wrote. It's not my words. That's what he wrote.
All right.
And remember the first one, they were so worried about how real it was that it was going to inspire copycats. They didn't want to put it on TV. They didn't even, the author himself was like, this is a dangerous movie. This really shouldn't even be made. And now this dude's like, this is, I mean, obviously 10 years later, it's not real enough.
That is true. All right, so Andrew, thanks for coming on, man. It's a blast. So obviously we just covered Death Wish 3. We covered 3 movies in a row that had a high body count. So with that, the next movie we have to cover is going to be focused around a dead guy, and that is Weekend at Bernie's 2. We were lucky enough a while back, I interviewed Troy Byer. She's the main girl in it. And dude, this movie is so bonkers. Jamie, when was the last time you saw this movie?
I saw it a long time ago. And all I do is I remember one scene, and it's the underwater scene, and that just—it's disturbing. I can't, like, it's just so stupid. You may love this. I don't know if you love the movie or not. I love it. This movie is going to be one of my movies that I'm going to be like.
She told me a really cool story about that scene, because how they filmed it and everything. So that was pretty cool. So don't forget to review, rate, share our podcast. Follow us on all social media at Sequels Only, and make sure to check out our website, sequelsonly.com. Good night.
Good night.